From the Ghost Knight Media Studios, welcome to the Paranormal Underground Presents podcast, where we explore the unexplained with our resident panel and our special guests.
Hey, it's Karen, and I am here with Cheryl Knight, Chad Wilson, and JD Harrison. And we know it's been a while since we've podcasted. We took a little break. We needed some time off, and now we're back, and we've got lots of great guests ready to share with you over the next few months. Today, we are going to be talking to Linnea Lee, who is the author of Skulls of Salvation, which is a book about the Mayan doomsday prophecies and the crystal skulls of Belize. But before we talk to her, let's go ahead and say hi to our panel. We'll start with Chad. Hey, Chad.
Hey. I just want to emphasize it's a book of fiction. It's not actually a book about historical stuff.
Yeah, thank you for that. JD, how you doing?
I'm doing real well, Karen. How about you?
Good. I'm looking forward to having you in on this podcast because you're a real 2012 Mayan kind of guy.
Oh, well, thanks a lot. I'm looking forward to it and anxious to discuss this. There's some pretty interesting topics that come up when you talk about 2012. And, of course, you know, you have your believers and disbelievers. But hopefully I can stick with the archaeological standpoint on this and what's been said, because there's a lot of information that actually doesn't get out there. That's what we need to look at, that information, and see. You know, it's a pretty scary thing. It's coming up on us quick.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to talking with you a little bit about it after we interview our guest, because I know you have some insights, and we haven't really discussed them up until now, so this should be fun. Okay. Cheryl.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. We have a 2012-focused issue coming up, Paranormal Underground.
We do, yeah. Our December issue is going to be themed 2012. Rick Hale, who is an outstanding writer, and he writes for us monthly, he has taken an interesting look at 2012. So I think our readers will be interested in seeing what he has to say. We thought that podcasting with someone who has done some research on 2012 and has written some fiction about it and can discuss with us, you know, her thoughts on the issue, that would be fun. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. Okay, well, let's go ahead and get started then. We'll introduce our guest. So our guest today is Linnea Lee. She is the author of a book called Skulls of Salvation, and it's about Mayan doomsday prophecy and the crystal skulls of Belize. Linnea, welcome to Paranormal Underground.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Good. Okay, well, I am going to step back into the background, and we're going to let everybody ask you some questions. And so the first person asking questions will be Cheryl.
Hi, Linnea. Welcome to the podcast today. I wanted to start off by asking you if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of what you're interested, what you like to write about, and that kind of thing.
I am kind of like the amateur ancient historian. I love ancient history. My series of Atlantis is based on history. There's a lot of history in my books. It would be into the genre historical fantasy because my facts are straight. What I did was I weaved the fantasy around the facts. And as for me, I'm 52 years young. I just get younger. And my mom was a school teacher. She died when I was 8 from a stroke. But she homeschooled me when she was alive, and she introduced me to Plato's Atlantis when I was 5, so that's what started the obsession right there. And my dad, you know, he was in the Navy, and my grandmother got custody of me because he didn't have an established home life in the 60s. And I went on from there. I went to boarding school, which was the best thing that ever happened to me. I even graduated in my junior year, thanks to my mother, laying the foundation.
Okay.
Then I went on to manage convenience stores and restaurants. I had the same stroke that my mom had when I was 35, and it put me in a wheelchair. All my books are typed one-handed, and I started in 2001 writing. And since then, I have pocketed 6 novels and 2 anthologies, so...
Wow. And I know that you like to discuss history's mysteries, like the crystal skulls, ancient civilizations, and doomsday prophecies, of course, which is what we'll talk about, get into here today. What originally brought your interest to these subjects? I know you said you spoke about your mom a bit. Was that originally what led you to these types of subjects?
As far as Atlantis, yes. Now, the Mayan doomsday prophecies of the skulls, I've had a fascination with for about 25 years. The more research I did on them, the more obsessed I became with them. And another one of my obsessions is Egyptology. And
okay.
Like in my first book, I make my main character assume the identity after the devastation of Atlantis. He's third dynasty. He's under Pharaoh Djoser. He's Imhotep.
Okay.
So my character takes on different historical identities.
Right. Okay. Now, I know Chad's going to ask you a little bit about that, you know, we interweaving some historical facts with your fiction. So we'll let him get to that. But can you list off a few of the titles of the books that you've written?
Yes, but one is simply In Atlantis.
Okay.
But two, Skulls of Salvation.
But Skulls
three,
of Salvation.
The Chosen. Right. But three is The Chosen. But
okay.
Four is Resurrection, Reunion, and The Ravaged. But five is Labyrinth into Oblivion.
Can you talk about Skulls of Salvation? Now, I know it's a five-part series, and you just released the second part, I think, in October?
Yes. All five are finished. They're just waiting.
Okay.
For the right time.
Right.
But, you know, Skulls of Salvation, it deals with really something you've got to be fearful of today. That's the stratosphere, the dome that protects the Earth above the stratosphere. I'm sure
okay.
What about that? And we got Holland thing. And if December 21st, the galactic alignment happens, which it is going to, that's proven.
Okay.
And what they don't know is how it's going to, you know, affect us. But
right.
If there is a gamma ray burst or sunburst, we have no protection. And so I kind of incorporated that in my book. But in my book, other than the movie 2012, I used the crystal skulls to give a ray of hope.
I know the movie just came out, but did you get a chance to see 2012, the movie?
No, I haven't seen it, and it makes me mad because I wanted to. But see, what's so strange, I wrote Skulls of Salvation 2 years ago, and we were going to put it out in February, but some things happened and we couldn't publish till now, which was
okay.
The greatest thing that ever happened, coming out right before the movie.
We actually did see it, and it was pretty had a definite doomsday scenario going on there as far as for 2012 is concerned, and I was just curious what you might have thought about it. I think in the movie, if I remember correctly, they were basically saying that there was a solar flare. Chad's going to correct me if I'm wrong, using the wrong terminology here, but that heated up the Earth's core, and which then caused all of these massive natural disasters, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, tidal waves.
You know, one thing I've always thought, like the Mayans always referred to the galactic alignment, or it's the Milky Way, the Earth and the Sun. And the middle of the Milky Way, they say, is our center of our universe. And the Mayans refer to it as the dark rift. And they also say it's a black hole. And because of the instability of the black hole, it causes that immense gravitational pull. And I've often wondered, you know, the pull could be so powerful. I've thought, and this isn't in my book, but I've thought, there could be a possibility it could pull magma from the center of the Earth.
Okay.
And I'm on the right track, it looks like, at least with the movie.
Yeah, I've heard so many different theories about what's going to happen come 2012 and the supposed end of the Mayan calendar, you know, from, you know, the end of the world to a time of rebirth, spiritual rebirth and whatnot. So I'm very interested in the topic.
If it is an awakening or a rebirth, it's happening now. The prophecy is starting to come through now because there's more people in touch with their spirituality over the past 10 years than ever before. And why? Because of December 21st, 2012. Because we're getting close.
Yeah. Well, Chad and I joked around the other day about, you know, when we get married, we'll make it December 22nd of 2012. So we like to have fun with the date. But for me, I lean towards a theory of kind of spiritual awakening, rebirth and that kind of thing. So that's just my take on the whole thing. I know there's all sorts of different things out there.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen. I'll be honest. I mean, this alignment only occurs over 25,800 years. And, you know, I know when they did some, they were doing some digging at Pompeii to see how many times Vesuvius had erupted since Pompeii. And one of the layers they found wasn't anything but total ash. And they say that was around the time of the last galactic alignment, from what I heard on the show on TV.
Okay. Interesting. I think I'm going to turn you over to Chad, and he's got some interesting questions for you. And I think it'll be fun. So thanks for answering my questions, and I'm going to sit back and listen and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
You're quite welcome. Okay,
thank
Mr.
you.
Knowledge, let's go.
Okay. I was basically wanting to ask you, now, being a writer myself, I like to deeply research whatever I'm writing about so I can include, historical places, history itself, and like items from history, like in your book, Skull of Salvation, you have something called the Dresden Codex, which is actually a real set of tablets they found.
It's
details
the Mayan
of the
log cabin calendar.
Yes. I just wanted to ask, why did you do that? Is it for realism?
I was just obsessed with it, Like, if you go to Civil War, I could care less. It's not old enough.
Yeah.
Our history in the States isn't old enough for me. I mean, I want to go to Egypt, Babylon, all these old, old places. I'm just obsessed.
Yeah.
And I chose to write about history because I have a passion for history. And
okay.
I wanted my passion to come through on pages of my book. There's nothing else I can write on that I have more passion about than that.
Well, we did an interview last year with Bill Holman. He's the owner of the Mitchell Hedges Crystal Skull.
Oh.
And I just want to know, what do you know? Do you know anything about the crystal skulls themselves? And I know they found the Mitchell Hedges in the Belize in 1924.
Yes, it was Anna Mitchell Hedges.
Yes, okay. So what do you know about the crystal skull?
The Mitchell Hedges is thought to be the 13th skull, the main skull.
Oh, is it thought to be the last one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there are 13 in all.
Mm-hmm.
And they say if you put the Mitchell Hedges in the middle of the other 12, it's in two parts. It has a movable jawbone.
Yeah.
And they say it can talk, it will sing, it will show you the secrets of the universe and the origins of man.
Okay.
And I had a friend, I think, she died, back in the 90s,
yeah.
Didn't she, I think?
Yes.
I had a friend that was asked, she's very intuitive, and she was asked to go see the skull.
Mm-hmm.
I could have hit her, but she said that I would not have believed the power that she felt emulating from that skull. And they think, at least that's what this is what they're telling us. Eight have been found. There's five more to go.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have them all, as far as I know, because I'm a glutton for conspiracy theories. So.
Oh yeah. Well, where they're supposed to be? Where they're supposed to be taken? Is it just around the planet, or is it some certain spot? Or
I have heard. From my research, that they think, one might be in Antarctica because they think at one time that was an outpost.
Yeah.
I have heard even in Peru because of Nazca lines. But I still believe there was a place that Anna Mitchell Hedges' husband went.
Okay.
In Belize somewhere. And she told him that there was another skull there. She said that her father had found this treasure, including another crystal skull.
Okay.
And these Spanish dragoons, whatever they're called. Mm-hmm. And when he found out that he was not going to be able to take them through customs, he hit them. And he never went back to get them. But Anna Mitchell had just shut into her husband. She went back to shoot him.
Okay. Well, see, I've always been fascinated with Atlantis. And I heard, you know, just through various places it's been. I tend to think it's maybe in Antarctica.
No.
Where do you think it's at?
It's right around the Bermuda Island.
Oh, the Bimini Road? Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because, I mean, the Bahama Islands are gorgeous. I think they're one of the most beautiful places on Earth.
Okay.
Atlantis was supposed to be one of the most beautiful places on Earth. And what I think they're the hills, the mountaintops, the remnants. And then, of course, you've got the Bermuda Triangle right in that area, too.
Mm-hmm.
That would make sense. And I think that is like a vortex between dimensions. Because it's Einstein himself that said, for every known dimension, there is an innumerable amount of unknown dimensions.
Okay.
So if he is his okay, there's fine with me. But no, right off the coast of Puerto Rico, too, there's a trench called the Puerto Rican Trench. 1,100 miles long, 5 miles wide, 6 miles below sea level. Yes, they found Titanic, but that's 2.5 miles below sea level.
Yeah.
They haven't conquered the depth of 6 miles below sea level yet. And I believe when they do, they'll find remnants. I think it'll be like any other archaeological dig.
Yeah.
I think they'll find remnants. They really do.
Well, supposedly there's a city off the coast of Cuba, like way far down.
Yeah, it's covered by coral and seaweed and all this stuff. But the imaging they've done shows buildings.
Yeah.
And another thing about that area, you might not have known that the sand itself is 70% beach sand. And that means at one time it was above the water. So.
Okay. Well, yeah, I've heard about sea level, you know, the sea level is rising, and how if you like go out onto the continental shelves of most continents, you can find buildings. You know, from ancient civilizations.
You've got to remember our Earth is 4.5 billion years old.
Yeah.
All you have to do is dig below about, like in my yard, I could probably go out and dig and find an Indian arrowhead or something.
Okay.
The archaeology is under the ground. And all these other places they're finding, I don't think they were Atlantis. I think they were advanced civilizations, but I don't think they were Atlantis. Because it was Plato himself that said they were beyond the Pillars of Hercules, which they think are the Straits of Gibraltar. That puts it in the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes. Okay. So you don't really have any idea what's going to happen in 2012?
No idea. The only thing I know is the Mayans were the most popular, but the Mayan calendar ends. They did this 5,125 years long calendar. It's divided into five parts. Four have already happened. And they have proven the last 1,000 years that some kind of climatic shift was why a part of the demise of the Mayans. So the fifth one ends December 21st, 2012. But just because it ends, there's also on the temple and the incantations in Chichen Itza, I believe, that they have deciphered. It could either mean an awakening or the end of days. I believe it's entirely left up to us.
Have you ever heard of something called the precession of the equinoxes?
Yes, I have.
It's the Egyptian, basically Egyptians called it a great year.
Right. Yes, I've heard of it.
And it has something to do with the zodiac and the constellations. But supposedly, I guess we're getting ready to go into the age of Aquarius. And I don't know if that occurs right at that time, or I'm not. I know a little bit about it.
I'm not that learned there. I don't know. But I do know on the ancient zodiac, there's 12 signs. But in actuality, there are 13.
Okay. And what's the 13th?
And it happens, this one is right at the winter equinox, December 21st.
Okay.
And it's called, yeah. I cannot pronounce it, but it is called O-P-H-E-I-C-H-I-U-S, a peaches or something like that.
Okay.
And why they didn't include that on the zodiac, I don't know.
Hmm. Interesting.
But maybe that's something the Mayans figured out.
Their
days, you know, like it was something, their year I know is 365 days and 280 days, and I can't remember what that is right off. But
well, they had different lengths of time for different
cycles, yeah.
Events, yeah.
But they say that calendar they use is a tenth more accurate than the one we use today.
Okay.
And that is amazing.
Yeah, considering how long ago it was, yes.
Yeah, I told my husband they tracked the stars, yeah, but they could see them better then. We didn't have the smog that we have
yeah.
now.
Didn't have the lights and stuff, yeah.
Right.
Well, that's all my questions, and I thank you for answering my questions.
And thank you, Chad. You've been good.
You're welcome.
You didn't tear me apart.
I have a couple questions to ask you. As they told you, I'm the science editor here. I'm also practicing archaeologist. I'm pretty familiar with the Mayans and a lot of Central American archaeology, that type of thing. I've done a lot of that. My first question for you is, when you were researching your book, now I don't know what you believe as far as the 2012 prophecy goes, but did you find anything in your research that may have swayed you one way or another in your belief regarding that 2012 prophecy?
Yes, I did. During my research, I found there were other civilizations that referred to the galactic alignment, and that just blew me away. I think that's why I'm so interested, because the ones that I found that made reference to it, they are separated by time and space, and there's no way they could have known about each other. I mean, we're talking the Chinese, the Egyptians, an ancient Aborigines tribe from New Zealand.
Uh-huh.
We've been talking the Vatican, the Pope's, the Bible code. I mean, it's all over the place.
Okay.
That's really when I, you know, just got blown away by it. But I found all this out after I wrote the book.
Oh,
I went back
I see.
And did research on my own.
I see,
I was
after
curious.
The book.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. You had mentioned the significance of the constellation Ophiuchus and talked about you didn't know why they didn't include it in the zodiac.
Right.
Okay, the reason that was, just to let you know, the zodiac constellations occur within what is known as the solar ecliptic, and that is the path that the moon and the sun take through the sky every day. Along that path, 360-degree path around the Earth, there are constellations within that path, and there are 12 of them divided in degrees, which makes 360 degrees. Ophiuchus doesn't fall in the solar ecliptic, so that's why it was never named as a zodiac constellation. But I know the Mayans were great astronomers. Their mathematics were extremely advanced for the time, even by today's standards. They were very scientific people. In your book, you mentioned you went back afterwards and did research on your own and learned some of those things. Do you mind telling me, like, what were some of the things that you learned as far as that you wish you would have known before you wrote your book so that you could have put it in there?
Well, one thing in my book, I had to bring aliens in. Now, this really blew me away.
Okay.
I chose Orion. I chose Orion's belt, a star in Orion's belt.
Okay.
Because I've always believed the Atlanteans, if not all of them, some of them were hybrid. And my aliens were, you know, I call them the Orion. Mm-hmm. All right, on the Giza Plateau, of course, are the three pyramids. They sit in total trajectory of what the three stars in Orion's belt are going to be in December 21st, 2012. Now, that blew me away. I did not know this when I wrote the book.
Okay.
I chose the Orion. That just blew me away.
I see.
Another thing I learned was back in the 16th century, there was a Pope Malachi, and he wrote a book called Prophecies of Popes. In this book, where we are now, he says we'll be under Pope Benedict. Pope Benedict is over 80 years old. This Pope said there'd be one more Pope after him, it'd be Pope Peter, common name, but, and he said that's when all this tragedy and cataclysm would occur. The Aborigines tribe, they're called the Morales from New Zealand, 4,000 years ago, they made reference to the alignment, saying the earth will no longer be protected. The great curtain is torn. Ozone layer, maybe? Then there's a village in France, a little village called Hyundai, I believe is the name of it. And there's a cross there that belonged to the Knights Templar. In the base of the cross are symbols that depict the alignment of December 21st, 2012. There was this guy on Wall Street back in 2006 that predicted a total collapse of the economy, which happened last year. And he said that would be, after that, start noticing everything around you. That, you know, that's just some of the things I found out. But it's really,
I see.
It's really unreal.
Yeah, it can be. Okay, I hate to do this, but I'm almost out of time here. We're approaching our time limit. So that's all I have for you right now. And I want you to know it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
And thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, my voice is going to hold out for a few more minutes here. I'm losing my voice. So I wanted to thank you, Linnea, for coming on and talking to us. Before we go and let you go, did you have any final thoughts that you wanted to share with our listeners?
Just look around. That's all I got to say. Just look around. Because if you like Stonehenge, Machu Picchu, just look around. And you'll see the angels were a lot more advanced than what we are led to believe.
Okay. Hey, do you have a website?
Sure do. www.lanaislair, LanaisLair.com. Go to my homepage and get my books. There's also a place to email me if you want to.
Terrific. Okay, well, thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and let you go and have our roundtable discussion now. Thank you so much, Linnea.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Linnea. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Initially, what I want to do is, before we get into our discussion, because I know Chad and JD especially know a lot about 2012 and the Mayan prophecies and Atlantis and crystal skulls and all of that stuff, but I just kind of want to hear what everyone here thinks is going to happen in 2012. Cheryl, I know you said that you think it's going to be a consciousness shift. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I basically just think it's an awakening of sorts, and it's not anything. It doesn't have anything to do with doomsday or the end of the Mayan calendar and that kind of a thing. That's just my personal belief. Yes. I don't have really anything more to add to that.
Do you think that it'll be brought about? That consciousness shift will be brought about by something physical, by some kind of cataclysmic event?
You know, I'm not sure. It could very well happen that way. I don't know. I mean, I was like, when she started, talking about aliens, I immediately flashed back to my conversation with Stan Romanek. He brought it up in the interview, and he basically said that, when I came out, because he had these equations that were given to him supposedly by his interaction, his alien abductions, his interaction with these alien beings. And then he would write out these complex equations and, these types of, I don't know if they're visions per se, but basically he said, when I came right out and I said, what do they mean? Does it mean a doomsday or does it not? What does it mean? And he basically said, no, he doesn't think that it's going to be a doomsday. It's going to be a kind of shift. And I thought that was interesting. Now, that the whole basis behind Stan Romanek's story is a whole different subject, but it just made me flash back to my conversation with him and these equations that are just, if people can research the Stan Romanek equations, I would suggest them taking a look at it, because I find it very fascinating myself. But it just made me think of that, and that, why a specific date? Why are people putting a specific date you know, is it really the end of the Mayan calendar or is it something else completely?
Sure.
You know, I don't know if it's going to be physical or not.
So. Sure. So, Chad, what do you think is going to happen in 2012?
Well, I'm along the same lines as Cheryl. I think it's going to be like a spiritual awakening, but I think it's going to be brought about even now. It's even occurring now through economic change, and people will come to realize that the physical is not really, I mean, you can have money and everything, but if you're not happy, then what's the point? And I just think that if you don't learn to adapt, that you're, I mean, hopefully it'll change to where, you know, the banks and the financial institutions don't have as much control over us. And if you're of that mindset, then maybe you won't survive. That's kind of what I think.
Yeah. All right. You know, that makes actually some sense to me. My friend, Melissa Watts, who is the hypnotherapist, we've talked to her on our show before. Mm-hmm. She has sort of said all along that the purpose of this whole financial fiasco that we're currently going through in our country and in the world is because of just exactly what you said. So that's interesting. That struck a chord with me. Very interesting. And JD, tell me what you think is going to happen.
What I personally think is going to happen?
Yeah.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I think that December 22nd, 2012 will be just like December 21st, and you won't even know it came and went. That's exactly what I think. And I have a lot of reasons for thinking that, but if we get into the discussion, I can bring those out. But it doesn't concern me a bit.
Okay. Well, and what I think is sort of the same thing. I am not educated enough on any of the things that Linnea was talking about that I can say absolutely for certain. I mean, you know, we can't say for certain what's going to happen 5 minutes from now, but I don't have any level of education as far as 2012. I've basically restricted my research on 2012 to the WebBot project, which is something entirely different altogether, and I have opinions about that as well, but so that's sort of what I think. Okay, so, Chad,
yes.
You have done a lot of research and reading into the things that we were talking about. Atlantis, Crystal Skulls, 2012. Excuse me, there goes my voice again. 2012. So I was really curious as to the things that she was saying that struck a chord with you, that things that you thought you could expand on, that type of thing.
Well, I think in a way that maybe it's all connected. I mean, I don't know what Atlantis was, if it was an actual civilization or if it was just maybe a metaphor for something else, you know, because I know Plato liked to use metaphors when he talked and stuff. But there are instances in ancient cultures and their inner histories and stuff to where they talk about beings from the sea that basically brought civilization to them. And what I thought found interesting was that supposedly one of these beings in South America was basically, they described him as part fish, part man, and he came out of the sea, and he said he was from Orion. And I can't remember the name of the species, but or what they called themselves, but basically they were from the stars in Orion. And that's what struck me as interesting, that she picked that as being aliens in her book.
Okay. All right. Well, and I noticed that, JD, you had something to say about that, and you sort of expanded on that a little bit, too.
Oh, yeah. They were talking about Ophiuchus, a constellation. Constellations, like I mentioned, are in the ecliptic. When the ecliptic is an imaginary line, it's just like when you look into the sky at night, it's really hard to imagine this, but you're looking at part of a circle. It's like the Earth. Imagine it like the Earth is a globe, of course, and it's within a globe. And the globe that is outside the Earth is space. That's what we see. And imagine it encircling the Earth, and all the stars are on this globe. And just like the Earth has longitude and latitude lines, so doesn't the lines in space. And they're called right ascension and declination lines. And they help you navigate as an astronomer back and forth across the sky. Well, the line that the sun and moon take, they follow the same line every day, and it's called the ecliptic. And all of the constellations along the ecliptic are within the zodiac. And anyway, Ophiuchus doesn't fall within the ecliptic, and that's why it was never named as a zodiac constellation or a part of the zodiac. There have been so many ancient cultures that in a lot of these theories that have been aligned with aliens and that type of thing. We know the Mayans used astrology. That was a big part of their religion. They did it. We do too. People still use astrology. The ancient Arabic cultures were really big on astrology. They didn't do anything without consulting the stars first. And you even see that in the Bible. I can tell you this to start, and maybe you'll follow my reasoning. Anthropologically, there have been studies done. And these studies have shown that throughout history, in times of social stress, people will always look toward an end of time prophecy to try to understand the upheaval that's occurring around them. You look at it at the turn of almost every century, for some reason, either religious or whatever, people think that during that time, the world is going to end. This happens over and over and over.
During the past 20 years, I can remember people setting dates for the end of the world.
You go the late 1800s, there was a religious sect. I can't remember the man's name. But anyway, he was the preacher, the leader of the sect. He set six or seven different dates for the end of the world, saying he could take clues in the book of Revelation of the Bible and mathematically calculate when the end day was going to come. And he readjusted. And these poor people followed him until they finally got tired of it. And like, look, after the fifth or sixth time, they got it, you know. But it happens. My point is, it goes on a lot. And you see this now. The Mayan calendar, you have to understand the way it works. And it's complicated, for one thing. It's not just one calendar. It's a lot of calendars. That starts with the 260-day calendar called Azolkin. And it's based around the period of human gestation. It's exactly 9 months long. It's broken into 20-day signs each, and there's 13 variations on that. And it's used to determine character traits and things in people. And then they had a 365-day calendar, the Hob, they called it. Then they measured longer periods of time, and this is where the long count comes in, and a 360-day year, which is a toon, okay? And it consisted of 18 months, or eunals, they called it. And anyway, 20 toons is a katoon. And 20 katoons is a baktoon, which is nearly 400 years. 13 baktoons adds up to the great cycle, or the long count calendar, which is 5,200 toons, is about 5,125 years.
And is that called a spittoon?
Yeah, should be. That's what I was thinking. I didn't want to say it. Okay. You said it.
Sorry.
All right. No, that's okay. Because anyway, it'll boggle your mind. But what they did with these calendars, some of them were used to measure cycles of nature for harvest and things like that. Some of them were for zodiac purposes. Some of them were for ceremonial purposes. And then their long count, which is the one that's supposed to bring about the end here in 2012. This cycle finishes. And according to the Mayans, every time they finished a cycle, it would revert to a new cycle. It's just like there was an astronomer, Philip Plait, okay, and he put it perfect. He said, it doesn't end in 2012 at all. And it doesn't. It doesn't end because this calendar they made has no end. Imagine an odometer in your car and it reaches all nines. And then it turns over to zero and it starts again. That's what the Mayan calendar is like. All right. And that's the way they meant it to be. Now, at the end of every one of their cycles was always a time of change. There was a new cycle coming, a new change coming. And that's what a lot of this is in. What people don't tell you is that the Mayans went on to record ages after this cartoon is done. You don't get that in the end theorists and things are not telling you that. But at the end of this cycle, there's other ages that are recorded afterwards. Now, we lost a lot of those because they were recorded in codex. And when the Spanish made contact with the Mayans. Unfortunately, they destroyed the codex, and only four survived. So we don't know what they wrote down and what they were talking about as far as in depth on this goes. But a lot of this is based on speculation, and they bring about talking about the alignment with the universe. Well, this alignment with the galactic center occurs about every 26,000 years. Then, folks, all I'm going to say about that is the Earth is about 4 billion years old, and every 26,000 years we have aligned with the galactic center. We're still here. Nobody has been able to link mass extinctions that occur periodically every 26,000 years or any type of disaster or anything like that. It's part of nature. It happens. It's just like the last time there was a galactic alignment, how many people did you see come out and say the world was going to end because of gravitational pulls and things like that? Now, look, at any given day, astronomy especially, astronomically speaking, we're going to be wiped out. There are so many big chunks of rock that near miss us, it's not funny. NASA has a website. It's a really neat website that you can go to, and it actually tracks these near-Earth orbit objects are called NEO. And
if you look, it would make people crazy if they went and looked at that all the time.
Oh, it would. If you went and looked, it shows you every day the date of every month how close these things get, and you can actually track their orbits in the past and all the way into the future. And
hey, David. I want to interrupt you real quick. And what you're talking about, the cycles and stuff, actually in the Vedic text, which is, I guess, from India, they actually talk about yugas or ages. And, you know, each age is so long, and how at the end of each age, there's like the last age, when it ended, it was ended with water, which basically would, you know, refer to possibly a flood, and the next one's supposed to be ended by fire.
Right.
So, and then you have the solar maximum coming up in 2012, which it's every 11 years. They said this one's supposed to be stronger than usual. Well, but I think people look for patterns.
Yeah,
well, they do.
They try to make sense out of everything.
Well, but we do that. We do that with everything. I mean, look at when you look at a picture where there's supposed to be a ghost in the picture. What do? You matrix. What do you do when you listen to an EVP and you hear a sound that's unexplainable? You form it into something that you recognize, you know? So yeah, patterns, human beings, it's sort of the nature of the beast. We want to see patterns and things. It helps us to create order out of chaos.
That's what earlier when I mentioned the studies that have been done say, we try to make order out of chaos, and we look for these patterns, and we try to pick these things out. And the only thing that makes sense to us as a society is the world must be coming to an end, because there's been so many prophetic writings in the past that have come up to this, and it has to be one of them.
Did the Sumerians ever touch on it?
No. They never did.
Even with all their... Like the flood mythology and stuff like that, they never touched upon ages.
No, they never did. And you know, another thing that you had mentioned about people coming from the sea, part animal and all that, you can find that in Native American. They're called earth diver myths. And I had written on this. And a lot of people, a lot of cultures all over the world have them, earth diver myths. And they all come – it's interesting. They all – have beings or animal-like beings that come from the sea and bring them civilization and life.
Yeah.
The Native Americans had that. It was in some of them. The
same
Eastern
thing
Shoshone,
happened in India.
And in the Shoshone, it was a turtle. Okay. And there was no land before that, and the turtle gave him land, and he gave him, you know. And you find variations of this earth diver myth throughout every culture, every ancient culture in the world, and it's very interesting. But it you know, it doesn't mean that they were aliens. It doesn't mean they weren't
some kind of maritime culture.
Yeah, it doesn't mean they weren't either. Another thing too, one big thing about this is we have been trying to find out, like, all these calculations up to date for 2012 has been based on our calendar, the Gregorian calendar, and the Mayan calendar wasn't a Gregorian calendar. It wouldn't even begin. So they've tried to figure out when the Mayan calendar started. The closest they can get, just basically assuming is 3114 BC.
So wait, it might be wrong.
It might be wrong. That's right.
So it could be tomorrow and we don't know.
Could have been yesterday.
Oh, well, that'd rock.
Regardless of when it is, there's really nothing we can do about it.
Exactly. We don't know. It could have passed already.
Yeah, but don't you think that what it really is, I don't know. I think Cheryl would probably agree with me on this. Don't you think that really what it is just us attempting to have some control over that which we think is uncontrollable?
Yeah, and that's human nature. That's what we do, you know?
Yeah, I don't think that actually the majority of people in our society would think that 2012 is the end of the world. I'd be very surprised if that were the case. I think that people obviously don't want the end of the world. I don't think it's what they're looking for. I think that it's probably just a few that think, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I think that there's probably, just by the discussion of, you know, 2012 and the end of the world, you can come out with a lot of different things other than the end of the world. But
some people take it in stride because
I don't know if that made sense.
Okay, so you knew that December 21st, 2012 was indeed the end of the world. Okay.
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 How would it change how you lived if you knew? I mean, if you knew beyond a shadow of a doubt, which of course we never could, but would it change? What would it change about how you lived right now? I'm pretty sure mine would involve ice cream.
That's one big thing. It would involve appreciating things.
A lot of traveling. Yeah. To see the world before it's destroyed.
Yeah.
That would be scary, but would everybody do that? You know, all around the world, I would be more afraid of that, of knowing that the world's going to end in 2 years, because how are people going to react to that?
Sure.
You know, a lot of people.
Would you be the guy digging the bunker and laying in supplies, or would you be the person out there living your life and trying to do all the things that you enjoyed? That was sort of, you know, I know I was really flip when I said mine would involve ice cream, but let's face it, I'm horribly allergic to ice cream, and ice cream makes me feel bad. So I'm pretty sure that if I'm not going to be around on December 21st, 2012, on December 20th, I'm going to eat a lot of ice cream because it's not going to matter how I feel the next day. Seriously.
And there you go.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, so you bring up what would you rather be doing if you knew the end of the world was coming? Enjoying life or trying to avoid the end of the world by surviving in a bunker or something? You know, a ark or whatever. Okay, so the movie 2012 is basically that very thing. The government doesn't inform the masses because...
Right.
What good would that do? But they do, you know, embark on this project. I mean, I don't want to give everything away if people haven't seen it. And there's this dilemma between some people thinking that the masses should know and other people thinking, why? What's the point?
At what point do you stop being human?
Yeah. Exactly.
Do you want to survive the end of the world? I don't.
Depends on what's going
to
be after.
I don't want to be the last person. No, I mean the actual physical end of the world where there are like three people left or whatever. And everything's a smoking mess.
As long as there's a girl in there somewhere, I don't. Well, I'm saying it'd be bad if it was like three guys and that's all it's like.
Chad, what you need to say is that I don't want to go on without Cheryl, and if she dies,
I don't want to go on without Cheryl.
Well, see?
This conversation has been enlightening. Thank you for asking that question.
Just say it. You know what? Three guys being the only people left in the end of the world.
Well, it depends on who the three guys are.
Hope they're scientists and they know how to clone.
I don't want to survive the end of the world. No.
I don't want to survive. I've always said that if there was a nuclear bomb, of course, this was, you know, I grew up in the height of the Cold War, and so we were always sure that the Russians had their nuclear bombs pointed at us. You all did too, you remember. Mm-hmm. And I have always said that if there was a nuclear bomb headed for us, I would be headed for where it was and standing underneath it, because I don't want to live in a world that is like that. What's left here for me?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But then if there is new life, though, the other side of it is, there's this massive destruction. If there's new life, who's going to be starting it? What, you know, we need to start over. So who's going to be doing that?
The people who didn't drive for the bomb.
Yeah.
Well,
Hopefully it's not Republicans.
Yeah. Well, I'll be gone. Oh. I'll be gone, so it won't matter. You know, that's the thing. I think that what this really comes down to, when you look at things like discussions of 2012 and discussions of the end of the world, things like the Kool-Aid cult, not the Kool-Aid cult, the people that they drank the stuff and then they were under the thing.
Jonestown.
Yeah. And Jonestown. And mm-hmm. the more yeah. recently, the cult that thought that they were going to ride with Con.
Heaven's Gate.
Thank you. Yeah. Boy, I just not remember. Oh, Jim just yelled from the back, Heaven's Gate.
Yeah.
He just got out of bed and he's doing better than I am. Anyway, the point I was trying to make is I think that all of these things come down to one thing, and that's fear of death. And again, I yeah. think it's a control thing. I think that we think that we can somehow gain control over it if we spend all our time being afraid or worrying about it or say that we can predict when it comes or that type of thing. You know what? We're all mm-hmm. going to die.
That's right.
Yeah. Right.
Someday.
Yeah, but probably not 2 years from now.
I hope not. I hope not. And I don't think from an end type thing. You know, I really don't believe in it, as you can tell. But do we have time to talk about the crystal skulls? We haven't mentioned them much.
Yeah, I'm going to have to let you guys talk because I don't know a thing about them other than what Chad wrote in his article.
Oh, okay.
So
well,
go for it.
I want, Chad, do you mind if I start? I just want to say that today, first of all, they've never been linked with the Mayan. A lot of people probably out there listening to this saying, but it's true. They're associated with Mayan, but the provenance and context.
I heard you.
Sorry.
I was muted and you said that and I went.
Oh. Anyway.
I must be a lot of people.
There's no provenance and context on them.
Yeah.
Everybody just makes an assumption it came from the Mayans, and it's just not there. If you were going culturally, you were going to look at it and associate them with anybody, you'd have a better chance of associating with the Aztecs. The Aztecs, they skull imagery, figures, and all this within their art and society figured prominently. They basically worshiped death pretty much. The Mayans weren't like that. The Olmecs that came before them weren't like that. You don't find skulls that much in Mayan thing. Now, they have some on some of the temples, the sacrificial things and stuff. But my point is, to date, all these people come up saying that they own the skull and they have a story with how they came in possession of it. But none of them has been scientifically found. And scientifically, I mean, no one's been on a dig on a Mayan ruin and uncovered a crystal skull that isn't hearsay or secondhand, which means the provenance and context, which provenance being an artifact or relic found, that's the position it's found in a dig or a discovery. And the context are the artifacts or things that are around it or associated with it that helps tell the story of that artifact. And I guess what I'm getting at, you know, people say, well, scientists just poo-poo this away, but they poo-poo it away because there's no empirical evidence that supports it.
Why do you think there's a fascination with the crystal skulls and the mythology behind it?
Well, it started way back in the 30s, right at the end of the Victorian age of mysticism. And you know, in the 20s, mysticism was a really huge thing. People were consulting psychics and mediums, and you know, seances were a big thing, and everybody had seance parties and stuff. So right down around like that time period when the first one was discovered. Now, you did an article on that, you know that.
Yeah.
But it just came out of the blue. This lady came and said, look, I've got a skull. This is where I got it from. That's never been proved. Never been proven where she got that skull from. Okay.
Well, there's been some controversy where it comes from.
Huge hype. Huge hype then. People, you know, that mysticism was still around. People were still interested. And big hype, and it just went from there. And then after that, other people started coming forward and saying, well, I've got one. Interestingly, they all look different.
You know, I thought that all the hype surrounding crystal skulls, I'm sorry. this is why I should be, you know what I'm going to say, don't you?
I think, but go ahead.
I thought that all of the hype from Crystal Skulls came from that last horrible, horrible Indiana Jones movie.
No.
That was pretty bad. No, it'd been around for a while.
I'll be darned.
You know, they've done microscopic studies and yada, yada, yada on it, you know, and a lot of them showed that they were machine polished and everything. Well, immediately conspiracists will say, well, that's because they were done by aliens or society. Well,
or
I'm sorry.
Maybe they had tools we didn't know about.
Yeah, that's possible. You know, and I'm not discounting that. I am just saying that I have found artifacts that were so highly polished that if you didn't know they were in the context of an archaeological dig and that others like them have been found before you, you would swore these things came from a store. They're so perfectly made, so highly polished, made of stone.
Mitchell Hedges Crystal Skull was found at down in Belize at a old city, I guess ancient city. I don't know what the ethnicity of the people who lived there were, whether they were Mayans or Aztecs or what have you. But that basically, Anna Mitchell Hedges was walking, you know, along the tops of the walls or whatever, and she's seen a glint in the sun, and that's where they found the skull.
Well, that's what she says.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean it's not documented anywhere. That's a story. They've all got a story. I'm not saying she might be telling the truth, and that might be, but that's my point. It might be. We don't know. It'd been great if they took the time to document it, but they weren't. What were they doing there in the first place?
That's back before they really started doing that.
Yeah, and how does she know that she's going to find a crystal skull and she's supposed to have a camera right there? You know, this is before everybody had a reality crew, I would assume.
Well, that's not the point. Archaeologists were documenting sites way back in the 1800s.
But they weren't. They didn't have the standards and methods they have today.
Sure they did. Heinrich Schliemann, back in the 1800s, when he discovered Troy, was one of the first to do it.
Let me rephrase that. Maybe not everybody followed.
No, they probably didn't follow it as well as they should have, but by the 30s, it was in place, and they were actually doing it. I mean, it was a science, and it was coming into its own, and people were being taught to do this. And you know, most of your archaeologists, mainstream anyway, in the 30s were doing that. I mean, there were some good digs being done back during that time. And I don't even know. It's really gray as to whether what was she doing there in the first place.
She was with her father, and I think he was more of a explorer.
Yes, he was.
Not so much an archaeologist. So.
Right. So, see, to them, they walked in, they picked it up and left. But, you know, you see where that puts everybody else. And since then, not one skull. Everyone has had a story attached to it, but it hasn't had that provenance and context. It's never been found. They just come up with them. Look, well, I got this. I got this from so and so who went so and so.
It's interesting. The skull is made in such a way that it would be even hard today to make it that way because the jawbone detaches and it actually you can put it on there and it moves. It's got a prism where if you shine a light up to the bottom of it, the light comes out to the eyes. I mean,
well, it's crystal. I mean, crystal has reflective properties, and that might have been something that was deliberate design, and it might have been just accidental design. You know, it's hard to tell. You know, that's one of those things. I don't believe that there's 13 crystal skulls and when they come together, the world's going to end. That's where all this
no,
is came.
No, I don't either.
Well, okay.
I thought it was
supposed to prevent the world from ending, make the world end.
Like
that's the theory I had. Okay.
Either way.
Maybe the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull is an anomaly that maybe it is something to it, but it's maybe they've attached this mythology to it that really doesn't belong to it.
Okay, so
exactly. And that's what happens in most cases. You get all these mythologies attached and urban legends and things like that to the point where it takes forever to sort through the truth. Yeah.
So are there actually 13 crystal skulls that have been found? Is that the deal?
I don't know.
So where did it come from that there are 13 crystal skulls and when you bring them all together, something happens?
Well, see,
the first time I heard about it was a sci-fi program.
Yeah, and there's nothing in Mayan writings or codex or even in the hieroglyphs that even mentions anything about it.
I thought that I had seen on a program, and I don't remember the details, that there was, they got the information from, I don't know if they're called hieroglyphs or whatnot. I don't know if it was from the Mayans or the Aztecs, and that's now I'm kind of remembering that supposedly you bring all these 13 together, and it's supposed to reveal the secrets of the universe.
Where's this at?
No, that's another one of those stories.
Well, probably like, a myth. Yeah, probably a myth, but that's what I remember.
That's the subject of that new Dan Brown book with the Masonic pyramid, that when when the Masonic pyramid is discovered, you'll find all the secrets of the universe. It's another thing that people try to do to control.
Exactly. Yeah.
Their fate, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. And that comes right back down to it. We enter an age or a period of upheaval, social upheaval anyway. I mean, look around the last, 20, 30 years, things have been going downhill. Violence has increased. Financial things are really tough, going downhill, up and down, up and down. People have lost their job. And we have to look at this, though. We're talking about the destruction of the world, not the United States.
Right.
Culturally, we have a very bad tendency of taking that and comparing things that are going on in the United States with these, when we need to be looking at, if it was a worldwide prophecy, then we need to see if all these things around the world are coming together to prove it. Yeah. And you don't have that. Now, with the exception of this last financial crisis that occurred last October, that affected the worldwide economy.
Okay, I have to ask you something, because you said something to me one time in a private conversation. I just realized you haven't brought it up. If I don't ask you now, I'm going to forget.
All right.
Something about the world was going to end, and right before it did, it was going to be covered by a web.
That is the Hopi prophecy, which I was waiting. Nobody brought that up.
Well, I just did, but we've got to be brief because we're running out of time.
All right. Well, briefly, the Hopi have a similar prophecy with the end time. There are certain things that have to come together before it happens. Does this sound familiar? One of them that they say, and I found it very interesting, they said that the world would be covered by a spider web, wherein all people within the world would be able to communicate with each other. That was one of the things that they said would happen before the end time. Now, all of their things haven't come together yet, but I just thought that could be easily interpreted as the World Wide Web.
Yeah, but don't you think that a lot of these prophecies, sometimes the wording is so vague?
Exactly.
That you can interpret anything. If you go back and you look at some of the prophecies of like Nostradamus, it could be interpreted in so many different ways, which is a podcast in and of itself, I know.
Yeah, you're right.
But, and so when you look at the Hopi prophecy, and I just wanted to bring that up because we had talked about that, and I thought that was really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but everybody, it seems like everybody's got a doomsday prophecy.
Well, I'm going into depth. I'm writing an article for next month's magazine on 2012, the Mayans and the Hopi prophecy. I'll be going into in depth in that article. So you can read a little bit about that.
Yeah, and I think, Chad, are you writing something on 2012 too? Is that what
Cheryl? Not this time around.
Okay, I am. I'm writing on the WebDot project in 2012 and how it's a modern day prediction tool that seems to be uncannily accurate as well. So
well, I figure I got 2 years. So
that's right.
Maybe I'll do it in like our December 2012 issue.
You can get that. Well, hey, there you go.
Don't max your credit cards out.
We'll just put it as our last issue ever.
You know, I'm kind of bummed because I was really looking forward to it. A day of ice cream, frankly.
Yeah, you can do it anyway.
And if it doesn't happen, it gives you more to be happy about.
I was going to say, I can do it anyway. I'm just going to really feel it for about a week and a half. So, okay, well, guys, we need to wind this up. This has been really interesting. Thank you so much. Anybody have any final thoughts? Let's start with Chad. Final thoughts.
People need to realize that even if the world's going to end, there's really nothing you can do about it. So just live your life and be happy.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. JD?
Everything's going to be fine. That's what I think. It's all going to be good. Just don't sweat it.
Cool. Okay, Cheryl, bring it home.
thanks to Linnea for coming on and talking about some of her thoughts on 2012 and the Skulls and Atlantis. I thought that was fun to kind of just chat about that. And go 2012.
Well, just look at it this way. This recording will, if the world ends in 2012, this recording will live on long after we did.
There
Although,
you go.
Yeah, there's nobody around to listen to it.
Does it make a sound?
That's right. That's right. Okay, guys. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Paranormal Underground Presents is a presentation of Paranormal Underground and Ghost Knight Media. For more information, please visit www.paranormalunderground.net or www.ghostnightmedia.com.
Clues in the Book of Revelation of the Bible, and mathematically calculate when the end day was going to come, and he readjusted it. And these poor people followed him until they finally got tired of it. And like, look, after the fifth or sixth time, they got it, you know. But it happens. My point is, it goes on a lot. And you see this now. The Mayan calendar, you have to understand, unfortunately, they destroyed the codex, and only four survived. So we don't know what they wrote down and what they were talking about as far as in depth on this goes. But a lot of this is based on speculation, and they bring about talking about the alignment with the universe. Well, this alignment with the galactic center occurs about every 26,000 years. Then folks, it's not funny. NASA has a website. It's a really neat website that you can go to, and it actually tracks these near-Earth orbit objects are called NEO. And if you look
at NEO,
it would
make people crazy if they went and looked at that
all
the time.
It would. If you went and looked, it shows you every day the date of every month how close these things get. And you can actually track their orbits, all coming from the sea, part animal, and all that. You can find that in Native American. They're called Earth Diver myths. And I had written on this. And a lot of people, a lot of cultures all over the world have them, Earth Diver myths. And they all come, it's interesting, they all have beings or animal-like beings that come from the sea and bring them, so you know that.
Yeah.
But it just came out of the blue. This lady came and said, look, I've got a skull. This is where I got it from. That's never been proved. Never been proven where she got that skull from. Okay.
Well, there's been some controversy where it comes from.
Huge hype. Huge hype then. People, you know, that mysticism was still around. People were still interested. And big hype, and it just...
In a world that is like that, what's left here for me?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But then if there is... new life, though, the other side of it is, there's this massive destruction. If there's new life, who's going to be starting it? What, you know, we need to start over. So who's going to be doing that?
The people who didn't drive for the bomb.